भवतु, सहनौ भुनक्तु, सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै, तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Okay. So, Bhaktisandarbha Adhyayana 1, Adhikarna 3, Bhakti alone is the conclusion of all the scriptures. So then on page 88, I think we're down in the comments by Burijan Prabhu. Then second paragraph, two other stages, which are lower than Nishkama, Karma Yoga, are also mentioned in text 12. Yoga and cultivating knowledge, or Brahma Gyan, still lower than Brahma Gyan, and without a direct transcendental result, is the method mentioned in text 11. Detached work without offering the results, offering the fruits to Krishna. Krishna has already explained in chapter 5 that by working in a detached fashion, one attains the Brahma Gyan. Thus, Krishna has delineated relative grades of spiritual processes and spiritual progress. Srila Prabhupada has also explained these stages in his purport. So now I guess this is Prabhupada's purport, right? Okay. Thus, Krishna has delineated relative grades of spiritual processes and spiritual progress. Oh no, excuse me. In summary, to reach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the highest goal, there are two processes. One process is by gradual development, and the other process is direct. Devotional service in Krishna consciousness is the direct method, and the other method involves renouncing the fruits of one's activities, the stage of text 11. Then one can come to the stage of knowledge, then to the stage of meditation, and then to the stage of understanding the Supersoul, and then to the stage of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One may take either the step-by-step process or the direct path. The direct process is not possible for everyone. Therefore, the indirect process is also good. It is, however, to be understood that the indirect process is not recommended for Arjuna, because he is already at the stage of loving devotional service to the Supreme Lord. It is for others who are not at this stage. For them, the gradual process of renunciation, knowledge, meditation, and realization of the Supersoul and Brahman should be followed. But as far as Bhagavad Gita is concerned, it is the direct method that is stressed. Everyone is advised to take to the direct method and surrender under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Right? So this direct method we see, like Jiva Goswami is pointing out, you know, from Sridhar Swami's commentary, is that the direct method is what's recommended, because you hear about Krishna, understand who you are in the material world and Krishna, right? What's that process? But the supreme process of elevation and the supreme goal. Then understanding that, then one takes up the path of bhakti. So that's the recommended, because it's direct, it's very quick, and as it mentions, in one lifetime it can be accomplished. But for those who, even hearing all these nice things, don't have that, develop that kind of faith and all that, then these slower processes then, you know, can work, right? Like, so then renunciation, you know, knowledge, meditation, and realization. So he's taking it up through these stages, right? As Prabhupada mentioned here, right? The other method, renouncing the fruits of one's activities. Then one can come to the stage of knowledge, then to the stage of meditation, and then to the understanding of the Supersoul. So someone might say that, okay, you know, yes, you know, this is for the devotees. They have the Adhikar like Arjuna. I mean, they, you know, if they have the Adhikar like Juna, that's okay. But if they don't, you know, they're not devotees and all that. So we have to bring them through the gradual process. Right, you know, bring them up to the mode of goodness and that, you know, all these kind of indirect preaching programs. But we notice here is that they will start with meditation, and they will leave out renunciation, which is actually the beginning, and then knowledge, then meditation, and then realization of the Supersoul in Brahman, like this. The Supersoul then up to that level like that. But they're not doing that. They're just going to meditation because people are at yoga studios and they can relate to that, and they have their own attachment to doing that kind of stuff. But renunciation means you're performing your duties. Then you give up the attachment. So the point is that means you're following your duties, whatever it is. You know, I mean, the standard is the Varnashram duties, but otherwise, whatever is your, you know, background and tradition, that you're following whatever is the set social standard of what you should be doing, but you're doing that without attachment to the results. So then you have to start there if you want to start the indirect preaching. You know, and then from that renunciation, then the knowledge will come. Then they can actually understand how they are the soul and not the body and this and that. Then they can come to the point of meditation on Vishnu. Then they'll realize the super soul. And Brahman, right? And how, you know, everything is transcendental. Then they can come to the devotional platform, but they're not going to use that. So it's a speculative process. And then we see here is that everyone is advised to take to the direct method and surrender of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So Prabhupada's saying everyone is recommended to do that. If it's just that people are very stubborn to not do that, then okay, they can follow the others. But we know the other ones, that takes lifetimes and lifetimes. Who knows how many hundreds or thousands of lifetimes, you know, or more. So you know, that process is already going on. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya has given us the task of connecting everyone to the direct. Either they take it up, or we keep doing Harinam and distributing prasad till one day, you know, the Yajna Sukriti improve, you know, increases the point where they develop faith. Yes? No? You're good? Yeah. Riti. Having described karma misra bhakti, next, pure bhakti is taught while disregarding performing karma without worship of the Lord. It is stated in the previous two anuchedas that one who hasn't developed full faith in the direct process should perform the indirect process of karma yoga. Or better than that is to perform karma yoga with inclusion of bhakti and ahangrahopasana. Those who follow these prescribed methods will fall down from their position if they don't worship the Supreme Lord, because they disrespect the Lord. On the other hand, the devotees need not perform sacrifices for worshiping the demigods, and he has no fear of any obstacles created by the demigods, because the Lord gives complete protection to his devotees. Right? So the point is without that inclusion of bhakti, then there's so many obstacles are going to be there. Because when you perform these actions and you're not worshiping the Supreme Lord, then the worship of the demigods is always going to be a fault there. Because of that, there's always going to be difficulty. Anucheda 64. Later, bhakti is expressed by showing other methods. So according from Bhagavatam, O sages, most perfect in knowledge of the self, please explain to me the position of those who, for the most part, never worship the Supreme Lord, who are unable to quench their material desires, and who are not in control of their own selves. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.1. Each of the four social orders, headed by the brahmanas, was born through different combinations of the modes of nature, from the face, arms, thighs, and feet of the Supreme Lord in its universal form, along with the ashramas. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.2. Udriti, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. In order to describe the unfortunate condition of those who do not worship the Lord, first, the practice of worshiping the Lord is described. The Brahmanas arrive through Sattva. The Kshatriyas arrive through Sattva and Rajas. The Vaishyas arise through Rajas and Tamas. And the Shudras arise through Tamas. Though it is said in this verse that the four ashramas arose in the same way, they do not arise starting from the head, right? So they all come from the Lord, but they don't come from the head. it will be said, Grihashramo Jagannato Brahmacharyam Harido Mama Vakshas Talad Vane Vaso Nyasas Shirashani Chas Shirashirani Cha Stitaha. The Grihastas are situated in the hips, the Brahmacharis in the heart, the Vanaprasthas in the chest, and the Sannyasis in the head. Right? So then the Brahmacharis are the heart, because that's going to be the basis of the whole Varnashram system, because there is that as training in Brahmacharya, that then gives rise to the other three ashrams. And we see if it's in the heart, that means it's dear to the Lord, because there then one has that service attitude, that full surrender to the spiritual master, that service attitude, one's not engaging the senses outside of Krishna, you know, one's service and Krishna consciousness. So then it becomes a very perfect platform for practicing, for devotional service. So therefore it's the heart. Then we see then the chest, is the vanaprasthas, because then, like the arms, they protect, they give direction to the grihastas and others, because they have experience, the vanaprasthas, having grown up and having been trained and then grown up in the grihastha ashram. Then they have realization that others won't have. Like so many times I can remember two cases where we're discussing something about the grihastha ashram. And there was somebody who was either just about to, generally I think about to get married, or maybe just married. And so then the points that were being made in the Bhagavatam, then that particular devotee was saying, no, my situation's different than that. And that's, they were kind of pointing it out that that's like the extreme. And so therefore then, the general grihastha life won't be like that. Then I remember 10 years later, the same conversation came up, and that same devotee said, no, exactly like the Bhagavatam says, that's how things are. So that's the advantage, is now having gone through that. Now here he's come to that realization after, like 10 years. I saw it twice, 10 years. So then you give that another 10, 15 years, how much realization they'll have. Plus they'll have seen children grown up. They'll see many children grown up. Then they'll also see others growing up like this. By that time, then they also will see, their own grandchildren. So they've seen a lot. They've accomplished a lot. And also by that, they come to the point where they see that they're, what's actually of value and what's not. They can see, okay, out of all the things that I have, all the endeavors, these things are worth maintaining. Because either they're the direct activities of devotional service, or those activities that most easily and efficiently and comfortably support that direct activities. And so now they can speak to the grihasthas, and they can speak to also, those who are thinking to get married or gotten married, whatever is the situation. Because so many of the times it'll come up that... that if one's not married or like that, if you say anything about the grihastha ashram, then they'll say, oh, well, you don't know, you're not married, like that. Even though you're quoting from the Shastra, means yes, on certain levels, then certain the details one doesn't know, but the principle one understands. So, but if you have someone who's been through it, they're older, so because when somebody's the same age, they tend to also, there's a little bit of that chivalry or rivalry is there. So you have someone older than you, someone more experienced and like that, and, living a more detached lifestyle. So that also, because as vanaprasthas are living a more simple, personal lifestyle and all that, then others won't think that, oh, he's saying all this or doing this to get some benefit for himself, because he already had more benefit and he gave it up. So why would he want yours? So it has so many elements to it that just make it so nice, to function like that. So that's why it's recommended, right? And then we see then the sannyasis in the head. right? So then like the Brahmanas, because the Brahmanas also then, that's the natural stage for them to take sannyas. And so then that aspect, they give guidance to the society, the Varna, and then you see is that as the chest, it's not just the arms. Because because we were saying before is, you know, Kshatriyas are the arms, but the whole point is that the chest has the arms and it also connects to the legs. You know, so it's the point where you can connect everybody. You know, so it becomes a very nice thing in the center of that the Brahmacharya, they themselves are also then living that more simple lifestyle. So it comes out very nicely like this. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur continues. Thus, the sequence for the varnas is heads, arms, thighs, and feet. Whereas for the ashrams, it is hips, heart, chest, and head. In this way, the varnas arose along with the ashrama, Sardarta Darshani. Right? So therefore we see as all aspects of the Lord are then represented, you know, and then twice you get the head, right? Shudra's already covered the feet, so that's taken care of. And head, then you see it both in the Brahmins, that aspect, and then the natural development of that, the sannyas aspect. Then the Kshatriya is the arms, the Vanaprastha is the chest, and and the Brahmacharya is situated in the heart. So this way, then you get the whole aspect of the Lord's form, you know, but that center point is the heart, is the Brahmacharya. Jiva Goswami. If any of the members of the four varnas and ashramas fail to worship the Lord and thus disrespect the Lord, who is the source of their own creation, they will fall down from their ashrama. Right, so the point is that since varna ashram has arisen from the Lord, then if you don't worship the Lord, then one will fall from that position because it's come from the Lord, so you can't disrespect the Lord. So, you know, one may ask, well, what if you worship the Lord but don't follow Varnashram? You disrespect the Varnashram. But then we see is that why? Because it comes from the form of the Lord. They're expanding from these different aspects of the Lord, so it has that kind of quality, that kind of potency. And then, you know, it'll work. So, but at least they're worshiping the Lord. That's good. But then the difficulty will be is that there'll be a lot of speculation because then they're having the philosophy, but they're not following the religion, not accepting the religion. So that will always give some difficulty. Previous to this, in the praises of Narayana by the Devatas in Drumila's teaching, it was said, Tvam sevatam sura krita bahavon tarayaha svauko vilankya paramam vrajatam padam te nanyasya barhishi balin dadata sva bhagan datte padam tvam Avita yadi vigna murdhini. Oh no, murdhini. The devatas place many obstacles on the path of those who worship you and surpass swarga and attain Vaikuntha. But those who offer the devatas their assigned shares and sacrificial performances encounter no such obstacles. But because you are the protector of your devotee, the devotee is able to step over the head of whatever obstacle the devatas place before him. Right? Because they're not worshiping the demigods may place obstacles, but because the Lord protects them, then the devotee can step over all these. So there's no problem. So that's going to be the solution to anything, is that worship of the Lord, that surrender to the Lord. The devatas do not create obstacles for those who give the devatas their share of sacrifice. They give obstacles to serve you, however, because of their jealousy. But certainly, Yadi, you are their protector. Avita, the one who serves you, puts his foot on the head of obstacles. Making the obstacles into steps, he moves about. So he uses these obstacles as steps to come up closer to Krishna. So therefore, whatever obstacle comes up, because he surrendered to Krishna, they just bring him closer and closer to Krishna. Right? So he's not saying here, because that, this is Bhagavatam 11.4.10. So he's not saying that there's no obstacles. It's just that the obstacles will come. But because of the protection of the Lord, the devotee steps over this. He's unaffected. And in fact, these become steps to bring him closer and closer to Krishna. Continuing. The king asked the goal of people situated in samsara. And verses Srimad Bhagavatam 11, 5, 2, and 3 answer with a remedy. If the members of Varnashrama do not worship the Lord, they fall from their position. Shamasa spoke thus to Nimi. So it means they have to worship the Lord. It means if you don't worship, if you don't follow your duties and that, and follow Varnashram, then there's just going to be a whole heap of trouble, right? There's not going to be anything working out properly. Then if you follow, but you still don't worship the Lord, still there'll be so many obstacles that will be put. And one will fall from one's position. The demigods will give facilities, but you'll fall from that position. Because you're going to get more and more entangled in samsara. The devotees then crossing beyond that, then they do everything. They worship the Lord, but it's about worshiping the Lord. They perform their duties in Varnashram. But you see, they give up they don't have to worship the forefathers. They don't have to worship the demigods. You know, they say they don't have to do all those secondary aspects. So they just worship the Supreme Lord and everything else is taken care of. So those others may create obstacles due to their jealousy that you're not worshiping them. Like we saw Indra, he gave trouble to the residents of Brajabhumi. But by Krishna's protection, then that obstacle was there, became an opportunity for them to step over all this and just be absorbed in Krishna 24/7. You know, so this becomes a very, you know, the point is that it's not that we're thinking, oh, no, it'll be just perfect. Nothing will go wrong. But, you know, even in the heavenly planets, things go wrong. Like Arjuna, he was on the heavenly planets, right? Where is Arjuna sitting, right? Is he a guest sitting on one of the nice thrones, you know, or he's standing on the side, you know, out of reverence? No, he's sitting on the throne with Indra. Because Indra considers him, you know, his son. And in there, then you have all, you know, whatever's going on. All the upsars are dancing and garvas and, the charanas and the vidyadharas are, you know, playing musical instruments, dancing, doing the whole thing. And so, you know, then he ends up getting cursed by Urvasu. You know, and so then he's going to be a eunuch, right? Arjuna, right? So who becomes the eunuch, right? We see in the Mahabharata. Who would be considered the most manly man in Mahabharata? It'll be Arjuna, right? And then he becomes the eunuch. And how did this happen? He went to the heavenly planets. So heavenly planets are overrated. You know, it's pointed out like that. It doesn't mean it's just like because the father offered the candy to the child, if he takes the medicine, it doesn't mean the medicine's still not going to be bitter. It just means after you get something, you know. So they get some facilities, but it's not that there's not trouble. It's not that there's not envy and jealousy. So we see that with Gopu Kumar, when the he got up to the position, you know, where there was, you know, Indra and everybody. Then when all the great personalities from the sages came and all that, and they were respected by the demigods and that and spoke. But after they left and they just on their own are just going to the higher planets, they don't need airplanes. They don't need anything. He could sense that there was jealousy in the demigods because even though they're so pious and all that, these sages and others from these higher realms, the Prajapatis, are even greater than them. And they're managing the universe, right? So in that way, they're the greatest, but there's still people bigger than them. And so they get jealous. So that aspect is there. So there's never going to, the material world is never going to be itself wonderful. What's wonderful is absorption in Krishna and his name, form, quality, pastimes. That position then makes one immune to all these things. And then one is able to take any situation and use it for that becoming more and more Krishna conscious. So you see is that even though Arjuna got cursed to become a eunuch, that became an advantage later because then he could hide himself. Because where does Arjuna hide? Right? He's the most attractive person. And so then, you know, it's not going to get out that there's some really cute guy, you know, at the palace. You know, the ladies are going to see and they're going to talk and then they have relatives and they have others. It's not going to get around. But if he's a eunuch, then he's inside. And so if he, you know, he has some cuteness, then, you know, I mean, of course, you know, because they dress up like girls, they're cute. What does it matter? Does that make sense? You know, no one's going to think otherwise. So that way then, for the king is there, right? The Virat. He has all of that. He doesn't even know who they are. He sits every day with Yudhishthira, and Yudhishthira gives him advice. His kingdom has never run better. You know, Bhima's, you know, there and cook in the kitchen. I'm sure that they've never had better, you know, food like this. And then, you know, Sahadeva and Nakula are taking care of the cows and horses. I'm sure that he never had, you know, a better Goshalan and a better array of horses. Everything was perfect, but he didn't see anything. You know, and Draupadi's there taking care and training the daughter, you know, so then it's going to work out very nicely. But he couldn't see because Krishna's protecting. So even though it's an obstacle, they crossed over that. Even though they were sent to the forest, all the sages went with them. And so they're surrounded by hundreds of thousands of sages. And every day they're able to distribute prasad to the sages, listen to them discuss, you know, about the Puranas and, you know, the histories and the Upanishads and all this. Like that, and allies come to them. Krishna and Bala come to visit them there in the forest. Arjuna gets to go to the heavenly planets and get all the weapons, basically, that are there in the universe, practically, at least all the most important ones. I mean, they crossed over all these obstacles. And then also it's that, you know, you have, I think there's even a prayer like that. Or in praise of Arjuna, is that he crossed over this, you know, ocean of the Kurus. I mean, that was huge, and came out victorious. And so at the end, there's the five of them and two more people. You know, that's it. That's all that's left out of the whole war. And so then that's the point, is obstacles may come up, but because Krishna protects, it always works out. So we should understand that having the opportunity to be Krishna conscious, that's the wonderful thing. Not that, oh, nothing goes wrong. Otherwise, then we'll see is that there's no question. Things always go wrong. You look at it, anything. Things didn't go wrong for Abraham or Moses and all that. You know, things go wrong for everybody. You know, it's just the material world, but that you can be Krishna conscious and you can step over these obstacles, use them to, you know, what is it? If it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. I think that's the saying. Yeah. Yes, please.
Maharaj, you also mentioned worshiping to the ancestors. May I ask on this point?
Sorry?
You also, I will connect my.
It's better to listen to
a little bit, yes. Uh-huh. You probably have to talk a little louder, a little bit, yes. please.
Maharaj, my question is about worshiping to the ancestors in the Vedic culture. I remember in one lecture you said that people worship to the pitas in Pitrilokas, and there are everything opposite to the earth. And in one other source I was reading that people in Vedic culture worship to the Prajapatis who lived in the Maharloka. Is it different types of worshiping, and we just call both of them ancestors, or it's one ritual?
That I'm not sure, because we're not involved in it. But the point is that Prajapati means their gotra. You've heard that they have a gotra. The gotra means which Prajapati your family line goes back to. So any cultured Indian family then will be able to say what their gotra is. So they know which of the 21 Prajapatis their family line goes back to. And if there are more, I don't know about now, but before, you know, just some years back, they could tell you 7 generations of their family. You know, nowadays, if you know your grandfather, then that's about it. Like, who goes before my grandparents? I wouldn't have a clue. You know, where they're from, where they were, who they were, nothing. But they should be able to say the names back, that know back 7 generations. So then you're going to have the worship of the forefathers means your parents, you know, specifically the father. You take care of that because you worship the father, because the mother's attached to the father, then whatever benefits he gets, the mother will get. That's the whole point, is that this getting the same benefit, like husband thinks that Krishna goes back to Godhead, the wife thinks the husband, she'll go back to Godhead. He performs the things, he goes to the heavenly planets, she's thinking of him, she'll go to the heavenly planets. So you don't have to do a separate, you put him there, but you're doing the thing through the father. And so then that aspect is there. In that, then of course there's going to be worship the Prajapatis through what is the gotra. You know, so that aspect will be there, but it's all part of that. So we only use it in saying, you know, what is there, but for most, then, you know, they wouldn't know. So you just were, as devotees, were a chuta gotra. But otherwise, those from, you know, the traditional backgrounds in India, they have a gotra. And so they can say. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Guru Maharaj, thank you very much. And also one question here. You said about Pitris that when we worship, you described how people worship to the ancestors in Pitriloka, and I found in some ancient Russian sources that they have similar type of worshiping to the ancestors, and in Asia, in China also.
Yes.
Many details are very similar, and I want to ask you. As I understand, people can go to the Pitriloka if they descendants offer them pinda or shraddha, I don't know, something like this, and it's by following to the Vedic rituals. And how people outside of India you're able to send the ancestors at that place, and did ancestors of non-Vedic people also or
But why would they be going there? Point is Pitriloka is a place where it's Yamaraja's place. So it's going to be that they are worshiping, then, you know, they themselves are following nicely their dharmas and all that, or they qualify to go to Pitriloka. And then they have the facilities and all that, because every year then the descendants form the Shraddha rites, you know, the Pinda. But if they're not following, it's where are they going to go? Like, let's say in Africa, they think that they all become crocodiles. So then that one place they worship, you know, this one tribe, they respect the crocodiles because they know that their forefathers all become crocodiles. You know, it's stuff like, you know, so it's just, the point is that It's people who are living according to their duties that go to Pitri Loka. If they're not living according to duties, they're just mlechas and yamanas, then why would they go to Pitri Loka?
Yes, Krumkaj, that's why I'm asking, because it was amazing for me to read that people who not follow to the Vedic Shastras, they described same place for their ancestors, like in Shastras.
Because the Vedic culture was all over the world at one time, and so this is what's left. You know, it's just like pre-Christianity, basically all cultures of the world, no matter where they are in the world, all had a similar concept of creation. Right? And in Asia, you know, then you have, you know, Ramayana, you have all these different things. They're all there because it was one culture before. The whole planet was following Vedic culture. And so depending on how long it's been since they've been following, then there'll be less and less. So they have some tradition, just like, you know, like in the Bible, you have Noah's Ark and all that. But you have the, you know, the Bhagavatam's talking about, you know, Satyavrata and the boat and being pulled around by Matsya. So it's there. You know, they think it was 5,000 years ago or something like that, or less or something like that. But, you know, we're talking about, you know, millions and millions of years ago. You know, so therefore, you know, these stories get left over. You know, they talk about, you know, in heavenly planets, they having, you know, wings. That's the Gandharvas, you know. So Christians have some idea of that. I'm not sure if Islam has. Judaic also has. You see in Asia, then they have, you know, like they worship, they have Gandharvas there. They don't know, I don't know if they call them that, but they always have that, and the demigods and things. So there's some little bit left here and there that gets handed down. But how much of it is there? So anything that's in line with the Vedas that they're doing is always going to create some kind of piety, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to get to Pitri Loka. You know, but it's proper that you're offering respect to the forefathers and this and that. And so there's going to be some benefit for you and some benefit for them. But what exactly that benefit is, that I'm not sure.
Guru Maharaj, sometimes when I give lectures to the people of other religions, they ask me about the ancestors, if the ancestors were pious people and follow to the Abrahamic traditions. They say that these ancestors can come to them in dreams and predict some bad things and give them some directions. We couldn't say that they in Pitri Loka. We can say...
No, you don't have to say that, because the point is, it's not that. It's a dream as you put together whatever it is, from your experience and all that. And they may come. So, but it doesn't mean they're coming from Pitri Loka, or even that they're coming at all, because the dreams and all that are arranged by Paramatma. He's the one that arranges. So therefore, some instruction is supposed to be there according to whatever it is, your activities, the results of your actions. And so we have to remember that all forms, all the elements of this world are all coming from the universal form, all are coming from Garbhodaksha Vishnu. So every variety of nose, every variety of eye, every variety of eyelash or eyebrow or hair or ears or, you know, chin or neck or teeth or whatever it is, whatever you could get, that's all coming from the universal form. So, you know, if this is the person who you'll recognize that if somebody who you don't know comes to you and says something, you won't take it seriously. But if you take it someone that you have some relation with, then what's the problem? It's not a problem for the Lord to arrange those things. He's doing that anyway. Your daily dreams are all arranged from whatever you did in the day and what you think.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj.
Okay. Yeah, means they don't have to take it too far. The whole point is, that's why I get so mystical about these things. Why not get into the point of developing love for God and being absorbed in God? How to do that? What's the recommendation? In fact, you know, but we shouldn't get off into this and astral travel and, you know, all these things that people can get distracted by. The point is that it's about the quality of your work and quality of consciousness. That's what should be worried about. Yes?
Yes, Guru Maharaj.
Okay. Riti. Next, it is said that the Supreme Lord is worshipped by various devotional processes as he appears in different forms in different ages or yugas. Anucheta 65. Since bhakti will be determined as the abhideya later, the particular request asked in Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.1 is suitable. The answer to the question about yuga avatars is given in verse 20, related to bhakti. Right? So then that was, what was that? Okay. O sages, most perfect in knowledge of the self, please explain to me the position of those who, for the most part, never worship the Supreme Lord, were unable to quench their material desires, or are not in control of their own selves. So then, in each of the four yugas, Krita, Treta, Dvapara, and Kali, the Lord appears with various complexions, names, and forms, and is worshipped by various processes. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.20. The Lord is worshipped by many methods. Nana Vidhina. Karabhajana spoke thus to Mimi. Riti. Next, the process of yoga meditation is described. Lord Krishna instructed Uddhava to fix his mind on the Supreme Lord and see him in every living entity's heart. However, Uddhava rejects this process of meditation and expresses his desire to perform pure bhakti following the footsteps of the gopis, right? So he says just that meditation, that was what we saw before, you know, what Prabhupada was talking about. He says, okay, renouncing the fruits, then one goes to the stage of knowledge, then the meditation, then the stage of understanding super soul, then the stage of Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, Anucheta 66. In discussing with Uddhava, Krishna says, now you should completely give up all attachment to your personal friends and relatives and fix your mind on me. Being always conscious of me, observing all things with equal vision, wander throughout the earth. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.7.6. Using Uddhava, whom Krishna accepted as being as good as himself, Srimad Bhagavatam 3.4.31. Through him, Krishna gives instructions to others in this verse. This should be understood in other situations also. The order should be interpreted to mean, quote, the devotee following your path should wander the earth, end quote. The devotee should have equal vision, seeing nothing except the Lord. Thus he does not see good and bad at all. The word too indicates rejection of everything material. This was indicated previously, right? Because something's connected to the Lord, that's what's proper. Something's not connected to the Lord, that's what's bad. But what you see in all that's connected to the Lord, so everything has its, what, how it will be used in connection with the Lord, what its position is, why it's there, why these things come about. Therefore, then there's no good and bad, because he only sees the Lord. Right? The word too indicates rejection of everything material. This was indicated previously. Quote, simply by decorating ourselves with the garlands, fragrant oils, clothes, and ornaments that you have already enjoyed, and by eating the remnants of your meals, we, your servants, will indeed conquer your illusory energy. Naked sages who seriously endeavor in spiritual practice, who have raised their semen upwards, who are peaceful and sinless members of the renounced order, attain the spiritual abode called Brahman. O great yogi, we, on the other hand, though wandering in this world on the path of karma, will overcome insurmountable ignorance along with your devotees by talking about you while remembering and glorifying your deeds, words, movements, smiling glances, and amorous joking, which appears to be human. Some question or... Jagadishji? No?
Well, I had a question previously when you mentioned that there's a certain qualification to worship the Lord, and we don't worship the demigods. That was in the beginning of the discussion.
Yes.
And then I was thinking that we do have faith in the Lord, but it's not 100%. Otherwise, we would be 100% engaged.
Yes.
In pure devotional service. So it seems like we do have faith enough to follow the basic sadhana, but it's not
yes.
enough for the level of Kirtaniya Sadahari.
Yes.
So that seems to be a difficulty.
Yes, but that doesn't give rise to worship of the demigods. That means worship of the demigods is for those who don't have any faith. Devotees have faith. It's Kama Shraddha. So when they talk about faith, that means that Kama Shraddha has arrived. They don't need to worship demigods anymore. And then when one comes to the point of Dhrita Shraddha, then one is very fixed. And it's only because of being focused on Krishna and not worshiping the demigods, that's why they go from Kama Shraddha to Dhrita Shraddha. But if they start worshiping this, that, and you know whatever comes along, then they're never going to get to Dhrita Shraddha. So it's not, and not only that, where's the qualification for worshiping the demigods? How do people that have no regulate, means the rules for worshiping the demigods are way stricter than it is for worshiping Krishna. Like you've heard Srila Prabhupada discussed, that in those big yajnas, if in that yajna, you know, let's say like a soma yajna, there are 90 Brahmins involved in that. You know, you spent, you know, basically a whole, you know, about 8 months or like that to build the kunda, you know, and all the different things and build all the bricks yourself. And they all have to be specific shapes. You can't just get any old bricks. You have to hand make them, you know, and the Brahmin is doing it. He makes all the square rectangle bricks. All the triangle bricks have to be made by his wife. They have to be dried in the sun and a certain titi, you know, you make them and a certain titi, then you install them. There's 5 layers and that's done over months and months and months. Then you get it. Then you have all these Brahmins and that all the thing has to be there. All that charity, all the, you know, dakshins has to be there. And if during that time when they're going on for however long it is, however many days, weeks or months, if one syllable is wrong, one syllable, the whole thing, you get no benefit. So therefore, when devotees play with this idea, well, I'm not on that level, so I worship the demigods. The person who says that absolutely has no qualification to worship any demigod. It's only by Krishna's mercy, sense of the soul, therefore they're able to worship Krishna. But on the material platform, because they're dealing with the demigods on the material platform, because of the material desire, they don't have the material qualifications to worship them. That should be understood. This whole thing is, oh, you know, we're devotees. We do anything we want. Okay, so then worship Krishna. No, but I'm not qualified. I'll worship the demigods. No, you're not. You're not qualified. You do not have the qualification. So that has to be there. And as Gopal Bhatta points it out, when you worship demigods, you have to worship all 33 million. You can't just pick and choose which one you want. You may promise after worshiping all of them, then worship one of them. But you have to worship all the demigods and everything has to be perfect. Exact time, exact people don't even want to do, you know, anything according to time anyway. And here, if it's not at the exact time, it doesn't work. You can't say, oh, I chant Hare Krishna. No, this is cheating. And then it would be the eighth offense of the holy name because you think the holy name, I mean, how you say, maintaining material attachments, doing these things that you're going against the actual whole process. You're be given the quick path, and then you're taking up the slow path. You have to remember the slow path can take hundreds or thousands of lifetimes. So the whole point is they don't have the faith. Then, you know, acknowledge that and move forward at the pace you can. The point is this, oh, I don't have, so I can do something else mundane. That'd be like, okay, the boy meets the girl, okay? And he likes the girl, he interacts with the girl, but does he have like full commitment that, yes, I'm going to marry this girl and stay with her the rest of my life? Does he have that? No. So according to this philosophy that these individuals are saying, therefore, he can go and hang out with other girls and do other things like that because he doesn't have that faith to be fully committed to this girl. And so therefore, you know, it necessitates him, you know, hanging out with other girls and having a good time. So in other words, you're just talking about a low-class, unchaste mentality. You're not talking about, you know, something elevated. Oh, but the Shastra here says, no, it says that you're not qualified for that. Know what you're qualified for. So if you're saying, I'm not qualified for this position, but you don't have any other option. Right? The holy name is the only thing that'll work for you. All these others, unless you have qualification, if you don't have the Upanayanam and are able to follow that, do everything perfectly, you can't worship demigods. Don't be illusion. You know, the rules are so strict and all that. And you make one mistake, you know, you're ruined. You won't get the effect. It's not like, well, I get something. No. So therefore, the holy name is the only shelter, is that we're chanting the holy name, even though we're not qualified, but the holy name being kind, then therefore elevates us to the point where we can. In other words, we're getting, Vaishnava Diksha because of the holy name. Otherwise, we don't have any other qualifications. And we're getting Upanayana, we're getting the Brahma Gayatri because of the holy name, not because we're such fabulous individuals. I mean, how many people in India actually have Upanayanam, chant their mantras, are regular, strict, and do it day in, day? I mean, that means day in, day out. Come back 10 years, still the same thing. I've seen so many devotees take up things 3 years, you know, very strict. Yeah, you know, doing this puja, that yajna, this, that. And after 3 years, finished. Worship the shaligrams, get so many shaligrams, this, that, 3 years, finished. Very common. Because, it's something that was new, you get into it, then you get expert by 3 years, now they're good at it, now, okay, now what next? But mode of goodness means day in, day out, this is your duty, you do it the rest of your life. That's what we're talking about. That level, they can worship demigods. You can say, well, what would the Shudras do? They hired those Brahmins. So unless those kind of Brahmins do the puja for the demigods, and where are those persons? So that's why these things aren't recommended. You know? Yes, please.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, I want to ask, when everything is okay, I remember I always was fighting with devotees who glorifies worshiping to the devatas and to other objects except Krishna. But when I was in the hospital and I was in a pain, I was ready to pray not only to devatas, but even to the Christian saints to remove this pain. And after that, I want to ask, does it mean that I even don't have a Komala Shraddha?
Komala Shraddha means it's not fixed. Dridha Shraddha means it's fixed. So that when things are going nice, you're worshiping here and there, and when things aren't going nice and you're melting your gold and making a small calf and all that, then that's Kamala Shraddha. So Kamala Shraddha means it goes off here and there, and all those ones that talk about demigods, all those ones that talk about all this soft preaching, all the ones that talk about this and that, you know, I mean, where you see is they're not getting effect. I'm not talking about people who do loft preaching and make a lot of devotees. We're talking about just those who, you know, do these things. That's Kamala Shraddha. It means it's malleable. You can change it. It goes off here and there. Something catches your attention, you go, then it has to be brought back. That's why you have to associate with those who are fixed. And by that association, then we start to go, oh, it's not that. Does that make sense? We always have to remember that we have to avoid this view of absolute destruction. It's either pure unalloyed devotional service on the platform of, you know, Maha, you know, Madanayaka Baba, you know, like this, or you're an absolute, total, and disgusting demon. We have to give up this attachment. Kama Shraddha means you have faith that Krishna is there and that he's the one he is God and he's doing everything. And, you know, oh, we're supposed to develop our relationship with him. We have that faith. But because it's Kama faith, therefore, then we go this way and that way and, you know, we get disturbed by anything and everything. Someone farts, we can't, you know, chant our japa, you know, like that. You know, it's just, you know, it's just, we have to understand is that that's what Kama Shraddha means. Vridha Shraddha means that doesn't happen. Kama Shraddha means that happens. So don't worry that, oh, if there's any little deviation, then I'm not a devotee, I'm nothing, I should just go back to being, you know, whatever, this, that, and it's all finished, it's all ruined. This is just the mode of ignorance. That's why the Kama Shraddha can be influenced by all these things, by passion and ignorance, or even attachment. You see those who are from backgrounds, the more orthodox backgrounds, they get attached to goodness. So in any case, it's all distractions that worship of the demigods or our traditions or this or that. No, it's about devotional service, pure devotional service. So therefore, we just understand, okay, then if at this time I'm having this difficulty, that means maybe I have to put more effort into understanding and know it's only Krishna. Because at the end of the day, that's all that's left. You know? That's all that's left. You know? And that's the whole point. Yeah, because then, like that. Because the point is taking shelter of Krishna, he's the one, because even the others, they have to pray to God anyway, to pray to Krishna anyway. That's the point. You go to the demigods, they have to go and ask Krishna. And if you're avoiding Krishna, then why is Krishna going to be pleased with that? You get the benefit, it'll be material and you'll be entangled by it. Well, if you worship Krishna, even if you have material desires, you get those material things. But it'll be arranged in such a way that you won't ask for them again. So they'll be taken out of your, you'll give up the material desires. So Krishna arranges all the material things. So you give up the material desires. You come to him. Well, if you go to the demigods and avoid Krishna, then you get bound by those. What's the advantage? They're saying, oh, I have all these material desires. It says, so? So what? Does that make someone special? You know, so there's devotees that talk about, oh, demigods, this, that. Are they special? Are they unique? Are they something different? That's just normal, mundane stuff. It's just that now, before they didn't think about it. You go back in time in Russia, someone gets into Maya, what's the first thing they go out and do? Catch themselves a bottle of vodka. You know, go check out a few of the girls that, you know, have all the stool in all the right places. You know, that's what they're doing. And now they're getting it, they're more purified. So they think, oh, demigods or some yoga or this yoga, like that. They get into that. It's because they're getting more purified by the process. So we have to understand it's by devotional service only that they're coming up to this platform that they would even consider demigods. Otherwise, before, they don't want to do any work as it is and worship as it is, let alone do some more. So it's only by the force of the holy name that they're able to elevate themselves up where now they're starting to see things, you know, from the mode of, you know, goodness and passion mixed rather than just ignorance or ignorance and passion. And so then these things look attractive, but when one has to continue that, no, it's only pure devotional service, because as soon as they get into these things, then they'll be distracted. And next birth, yes, they could be born into a family that worships the demigods. And then what? And then what? Others who have, you know, try to stay without getting distracted by these things, know that Dridhishthan is where they're trying to get to, and from there to prema, then they're going to continue, and you know, things will go nicely. Does that work or no?
Yes, Guru Maharaj, thank you very much.
Okay. Okay, how are we on time? Okay. So anything else, Jagadish Prabhu, you okay? Yeah? Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj, for clarifying. It was very important. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, so end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai.